Tasketam tamason hasya Dusparas yajya karakam Yach and such chakshur jamanam ante Abham nepad anugraha Tasketam tamason hasya Duskaras-yadya-yadya-pāragam Sakshchakshurjanmanam ante Labdham mekvad anugraha Tasya that Tvam your Tamasaha ignorance Andhasya, darkness. Dushparasya, difficult to cross. Andhya, now. Paragam, crossing over. Sat, transcendental. Chakshuhu, I. Janmanam, of births, ante, at the end, labdham, attained, me, my, tvat, anugrahat, by your mercy. Translation, your lordship is my only means of getting out of this darkest region of ignorance, because you are my transcendental I, which by your mercy only, I've attained after many, many births. This is Devahuti speaking to her son, Kapiladeva. Purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda. This verse is very instructive since it indicates the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. The disciple or conditioned soul is put into the darkest region of ignorance and therefore is entangled in the material existence of sense gratification. It is very difficult to get out of this entanglement and attain freedom. But if one is fortunate enough to get the association of the spiritual master like Kapila Muni or his representative, then by his grace one can be delivered from the mire of ignorance. The spiritual master is therefore worshipped as one who delivers the disciple from the mire of ignorance with the light of the torch of knowledge. The word paragam is very significant. Paragam refers to one who can take the disciple to the other side. This side is conditioned life. The other side is the life of freedom. The spiritual master takes the disciple to the other side by opening his eyes with knowledge. We are suffering simply because of ignorance. By the instruction of the spiritual master, the darkness of ignorance is removed, and thus the disciple is enabled to go to the side of freedom, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. After many, many births, one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, if, after many, many births, one is able to find a bona fide spiritual master and surrender to such a bona fide representative of Krishna, one can be taken to the other, to the side of light. Tasya tvam tamasom hasya dusparas yadya paragam such Chakshur Janmanam Ante Labham Me Tvat Anugrahat. Your Lordship is my only means of getting out of this darkest region of ignorance, because you are my transcendental eye by which by your mercy only I have attained after many, many births. The chapter is just beginning. This is just the second verse of Devahuti speaking. The scene that's been described as one day in a leisurely moment. Lord Kapila was not far from his mother, and his mother, very much like the mood of Arjuna submitting to Krishna, expressed her disturbed condition. She's very specific, disturbed by her material senses, and wishing to leave that and go to the proper position. And she's seeing that Lord Kapila is that person who can assist her in that, or can qualify her to achieve that. The Prabhupada begins the purport saying this is a very instructive verse because it indicates the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. We have this teaching that says in our line of spiritual life there are our checks and balances system, or our authority system, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. And comparatively between Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, which one is most important? The answer is Shastra, because Sadhu and Guru are dependent upon or are followers of Shastra, or the other way. If they weren't followers of Shastra, they're not Guru or Sadhu. So the strongest one is Shastra. So the Shastra states many things. Tamasi ma jyotir gama. Prabhupada said that he took the title for Back to Godhead magazine from that Shruti mantra statement. Tamasi ma, in this case ma means not, like maya, not this. So tamasi ma, give up ignorance. Jyotir gama, go to light, back to Godhead. So there's the statement, everyone, that's all that we need. Tamasi ma, jyotir gama, and back to Godhead. But that's not the complete picture of what the scripture says. Scripture also describes that in order to, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, to get realization or illumination from scripture, one has to approach representative of the scripture. So the scripture indicates such a position of guru. And through the medium of the spiritual master, the knowledge of the Vedas becomes illumined and can be realized. That's Krishna's system. Say it the other way. Without the spiritual master function, without the position of spiritual master, then the text in the scripture remains abstract or theoretical or something you can speculate upon but not go much further than that, because within the scripture itself is this indication of the system of delivering realization. Tadidli pranipati na parikrishna sevaya upadikshantatikyan abhyaninas tattadarshana. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge. For he has seen the truth. So he has seen the truth. Tattadarshana. Here the language is, Devahuti is addressing her son as her transcendental eye. Because you are my transcendental eye. Sat Chakshur. Chakshur is I. And Sat Chakshur is transcendental I. You are my transcendental I. Because you are the type of darshi, you can impart knowledge unto me. Fortunately, the Vedic process is personal. Knowledge is there, but knowledge is delivered from a person. And to illuminate that knowledge which is delivered by the Supreme Person, there's another person. And that other person is the spiritual master. And the spiritual master's service is to deliver that transcendental knowledge, to illumine the heart of the conditioned soul. So it's delivered by a person, it's personal. Therefore, the spiritual master is worshipped as good as God. I remember just a little historical part of ISKCON. In the early stages of ISKCON, Prabhupada spared no effort. He gave full effort to make sure that the early devotees understood that impersonalism was not something that he favored. It's not something we should take shelter of. One who says that I am God, he is dog. You know, he wasn't gentle to G-O-D, D-O-G. He got it backwards. There was a lot of that. He was reading, in addition from Bhagavad Gita, he was reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he was reading from the discussion of Prakashana and Saraswati, where he was, you know, making sure that the fledgling little bhaktas, bhaktis, weren't at risk by impersonal philosophy, because there were yogis and Swami is coming saying, you're God. Hey, good news, you're God. Right here in Chicago, the Vivekananda came at the World Congress of Religion to deliver the message, you've all come looking for God, but I have good news for you. You are God. Right? You are God. And people hadn't heard that before. But they liked it. So that was long ago. So that became over time more popular. Well, let's go to India and find out how we can become God. Or that we are God. So Prabhupada wanted to check that. And then, very prodigiously, in the midst of even the Srimad Bhagavatam translation, Prabhupada he went in another direction and wrote Nectar Devotion. Nectar Devotion came out in 1970, summer of 1970. And what Prabhupada had us do was, we had a morning Bhagavatam class, evening Bhagavad Gita class, and he added the third class each day, middle of the day, which was difficult because we were out at Harinam Sankirtan. It was like, you know, we didn't even come back for lunch. We just had lunch out at Harinam Sankirtan. But then, we made the arrangement. We came back for lunch and then had an extra devotion class and went back out again. And so we were just beginning to learn Nectar Devotion when Krishna Janmashtami came. And Krishna Janmashtami, during that time, it's just a little sociology of this kind. There was very little of, infrastructure. Certainly there was no congregation. It was just whoever were living in the temple, and that was it. So we had these things from time to time. We called them mahas. And that was, the devotees from several places would come together and have a maha harinam. And then, talk about Prabhupada and whatever, a nice prasad, and go back to your temple. And that was the juice that kept us going. One of the juices that kept us going. So maha. So from Montreal and from Boston, and come to New York and then Philadelphia. And anyway, we just had those things, those kinds of things. So the arrangement by 1970, New Vrindavan existed. And there are many devotees that went to New Vrindavan for Janmashtami. Prabhupada wasn't there, but it was a maha. Mahajanmasthani. And just before that, four super devotees had just taken sannyas. Brahmananda, who was, a big devotee. He had so much responsibility. Prabhupada gave him sannyas. His brother Gargamuni. Vishnujan became sannyasi. And Subal. So this was a big event for sannyasis that summer. And so they came to the Maha Janmashtami in Vrindavan, and they started expounding that Prabhupada was God based on nectar devotion, with a chapter that describes that one should worship the spiritual master as God. They were saying, Prabhupada is just humble, he's saying this, but here's the nectar devotion, he's God, we should worship him as God. And that caused a big wave. Like, what's going on? Hey, what's going on? You know how it goes. And I was in the Boston temple, and when we got this news that Prabhupada is God, it was, how do we process that? Because Prabhupada said, one who says he's God, he's dog. But these are four sannyasis, and Prabhupada just gave sannyas. What's going on? Imagine. So, Sanskrit Maharaj, who was grihastha at the time, wrote to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada didn't wait to write back. He sent a telegram. We didn't have, email then. He sent a telegram and said, there's a conspiracy. He was heavy. We just hit the ceiling. There's a conspiracy, and this is Mayavad philosophy. One who says that the Jiva soul is Vishnu, it's Mayavad philosophy. These persons are banned from my society. He didn't stop. He just, was relentless. I didn't know at the time, but there was, he was in Japan at the time, and he was in the same mood in Japan for the devotees in Japan. I found this later from Sudama Maharaj, who was describing what Prabhupada's mood was in person at that juncture of time. And then about a week, 10 days later, he softened and said, for 1 year, they have to be outside the association of my temples and purify themselves by preaching and stop this nonsense message. I am God. Of this Jiva soul is God. But so how are we supposed to take those scriptural statements? He explained it. It's the spiritual master is the representative of, like the ambassador is the representative of the country, and so he's respected like he's the country, or he's the president of the country. He's not the president of the country, nor is he the country, but he's respected like that. But more than Prabhupada said, because he's delivering the message of Krishna, he is to be respected like Krishna, not like a representative of Krishna, but like Krishna. He was clear. It's subtle distinction, but that was Prabhupada's point, and he said it over and over again until we got it. This back to the purport. The relationship of the spiritual master to the disciple is the spiritual master is the deliverer of Krishna's message, and Krishna's message is the deliverer of the disciple. Krishna is the deliverer. The medium of that deliverance is the spiritual master. He's a person because Tamasima Jyotirgama is something in a book somewhere. And here's the person who is explaining and delivering with potency that message. So Devahuti has already gotten the first part. And the first part is the life in ignorance is simply suffering. Life in ignorance is enjoy the senses with sense objects. That's life. And rejecting that life. She's already come to that point. Prabhupada said on a number of occasions that one of the principal duties of the spiritual master is to ensure that the disciple understands that sense gratification is to be given up. Sense gratification is a death trap. It's maya. It's the illusion that brings suffering. And again and again and again, isn't it a problem to teach this to the point where it's now repetitious? Like, what else do we have to say? But it's repetition is necessary for clear understanding. So you would say it again and again. And again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Because our tendency is to enjoy sense gratification. And the means of getting sense gratification is fruitive activity. So then we have the resource for sense gratification. And it's insidious. It just doesn't want to go away. We take the idea of sense gratification into the realm of devotional service and decide what our happiness is, how much I'm enjoying. Instead of, I mean, that makes sense. Happiness is how much I'm enjoying, but how much I'm enjoying in terms of the mind and senses. When the platform of real happiness is on the platform of the soul. Just as in the previous purport, Prabhupada is speaking about there's two sets of senses. There's spiritual and there's material. Unfortunately, we're not properly utilizing our spiritual senses, and therefore, it's material sense gratification, which is ignorance, which brings suffering. And Devahuti is saying, I've had enough. So she's already got the tamasima part. But the jyotirgama part, although she has faith, she knows what the scriptures say. She's not, you know, like one of us. Bhakti Devahuti. She's the daughter of Swayambhu Manu. She's extremely qualified. She knows what the scripture says, but she wants her son, being the transcendental I, her transcendental I, Sat Chakshush, or Tattva Darshana, to impart that knowledge unto her. There's a very nice section in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, similar, kind of a dynamic where Maharaj Pikshit is also super qualified. I mean, qualified, super qualified. He knows the scripture. He knows the answers to the questions he was asking. But he asked them not just, you know, rhetorically, or just like, you know, pass the time, or flatter Shukadeva Goswami. He wanted realization. He wanted that understanding that he already had to be illumined within his heart by realization. And Shukadeva Goswami understood that's what he wanted. And he gave it to him. Because that was his eagerness. That was the disciple's qualification. And it's Devahuti's qualification, likewise. And Kapila's qualification is, well, we'll see as we go along how qualified he is. It's not just information transfer. You can do that with, you know, your computer. Send some data to this computer to that computer. Somebody reads it. Oh, there it is. There's the information. But it's not. Spiritual life is not just information transfer. Spiritual life is illumining the heart in transcendental consciousness. The Prabhupada is using the phrase knowledge. Here he says, it is very difficult to get out of this entanglement and attain freedom. But one is fortunate enough to get the association of a spiritual master like Kapila Muni or his representative, then by his grace one can be delivered from the mire of ignorance. And how does that happen? The spiritual master is therefore worshipped as one who delivers the disciple from the mire of ignorance with the light of the torch of knowledge. Omadhyana Timrandasya Yananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unnivitamya Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. The spiritual master has forced me to open my eyes while I was shutting them very tightly. I can't see. He forced me to open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. That is, so we can see as he sees, or see as Krishna sees. Because that's what Bhagavad Gita is. It's how Krishna sees things. But how are we going to be able to see things as Krishna sees things if we're so much in our own conditioned autobiography? We'll see what we think Krishna sees according to what we see. We got our filters. We don't hear what Bhagavad Gita says. We hear what our limited conditioned consciousness says or can perceive. And things that match, yes, and things that don't match, we have doubts. Or we just interpret it wrongly and keep going forward. So to actually see as Krishna sees, that's the function of the spiritual master. He opens our eyes so we can see as Krishna sees. It's a very wonderful and a very personal and a very specifically empowered process, because Krishna is a person. And to understand Krishna is a person has to happen logically through a person, not through in-person. Through a person. So Krishna empowers a person. You go open their eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. And the answer is yes, sir. On your behalf. Only if you make it possible. Just as Prabhupada's arrival prayer in Boston, how is it going to be possible? Only if you make it possible. And Krishna made it possible. But the instrument of Krishna doing that is the spiritual master. So Devahuti is approaching her son in that mood. Now the son is to respect the mother. But here the mother is understanding that I have a very unique son. Or Arjuna is the dearmost friend of Krishna. But when it comes to illumination, he's the disciple. Krishna is the master. Shishyasteham shatimantam pratanam. The friendliness is put to the side, and the formality of I'm simply ready for your instruction, even simply ready for Krishna's instruction. There's room for asking clarity or even expressing a doubt. It's not inappropriate to ask for clarity. It's necessary. And if it, like Arjuna says, one time you're saying this, the other time you're saying that, it seems like there's a contradiction. Rather than not saying it, thinking, you know, something's wrong with Krishna because he's saying this and then he's saying that, so I'm not going to have any faith in him. But I won't tell him that because it wouldn't be nice. Sometimes stuff like that happens. Somebody during our Gidanagari retreat came up afterwards during the, because he didn't want to make the public question, he was embarrassed, but you know, when one sees that in Prabhupada's teachings he says this, in Prabhupada's teachings he says that, they seem contradictory, I check out, I don't know how to process that. Or someone, the speaker says this, another time the speaker says that, or one speaker says this, another speaker says that, I don't know how to process it, just check out. In a submissive manner, not in a challenging spirit, but as Arjuna did, I'd like to understand something that I'm not currently understanding, this and that. So, Devahuti is going to get that opportunity because she's, so another part of what we're receiving instruction on is how the inquisitive person is to address themselves to, in this case, Devahuti, to Lord Piladev. Prabhupada is abstracting with the principle, the disciple to the spiritual master. The person who is recognizing they're in darkness and they want to get on the other side of darkness. They know the methodology, so that's not what's even the requirement. You know, we've been studying Prabhupada's books, we also know that it's there. Tamasima Jyotirgama. Don't fool around with sense gratification, just surrender to Krishna. Got it. Next. But something more than that, than the theoretical understanding is required. Our elbow grease, just like, you know, trying. There's mercy that's required in a very personal way. That's Krishna's system. This side is so that there's in the verse, paragam, to get across over to the other side. Dushparasyaga paragam, the word is there twice. It's difficult to cross, and one can cross. It's like in Bhagavad Gita, it's very difficult, struggling. Daivyesha gunai mama maya duratyaya. Same idea. It's very difficult to overcome Krishna's energy, his illusory energy. We all have our experience. It's difficult to overcome Krishna's illusory energy. But one who has surrendered under Krishna can easily cross beyond him. And the surrendering under Krishna is through the representative of Krishna. That's Krishna's arrangement. So, here's what Prabhupada writes. Paragam is very significant in this verse. Paragam refers to one who can take the disciple to the other side. They have a nice boat. There's this ocean of material existence, and they have a super boat. They can take one to the other side. And it's really a fast boat. It's so fast because the ocean of material existence shrinks, and then you can get to the other side quickly. The ocean that shrinks is the illusory energy. The ocean of illusory energy shrinks because of the contact with the internal potency. It becomes then the internal potency. The verses there in the Bhagavatam that one who has taken shelter of a bona fide spiritual master can easily cross over like the amount of water in the hoofprint of a calf, as opposed to the ocean of material existence. How difficult it is to cross over the water that's in the hoofprint of a calf. Just an effort. It's easily done. Ordinarily easily done. But that which shrinks the ocean to that much is this taking shelter of a spiritual master. That's the relationship. It's Krishna making that arrangement. Very nice. This side is conditioned life. The other side is the life of freedom. The spiritual master takes the disciple to the other side by opening his eyes with knowledge. There it is again. So this opening one's eyes with knowledge is not just information, not just a data. It's knowledge means awakening of one's original consciousness, because that knowledge is already inherent within us. We're originally with Krishna. We're part and parcel of Krishna. And as part and parcel of Krishna, we have qualities like Krishna, we have knowledge. As Krishna is Satchit Ananda, the living entity is also eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Not as full as Krishna is full, because we're tiny. But knowledge is our natural position. And that knowledge becomes awakened through contact with sound vibration coming from Krishna, or Shabda Brahma. And there's an emanator of that sound vibration that's the representative of Krishna. And then there's a relationship with that person. Not just, you know, thank you very much, see you later. There's a relationship with that person. Because Krishna is a person. The eagerness to hear. Jigyasu Shreya Uttama, inquisitiveness into the ultimate well-being of the living entity, wanting to know God and our relationship with Him. That's what's that inquisitive spirit is required. And a willingness to let go of sense gratification. Then the medium of that relationship can carry us on the other side. Paraga, crossover. That difficult struggle. Okay. Krishna. Any comments, questions? Yeah. First here, then. It's compiled by, but where does it come from?
It's coming from Krishna. Okay. But I am using blasphemy when we say Guru Shastra Sambhu. Guru is also a personality, so like Prabhupada's books. For us, the Shastra, those who didn't contact Prabhupada directly. For us, the Shastra, more than we said Prabhupada's a Siksha Guru in our moment.
Yeah.
But in as much as we can say Vyasadeva is our Siksha Guru.
I'm waiting you to finish your question.
My question is, for people who have not directly contacted Srila Prabhupada, his books are more Shastra than the position of sexual world.
I thought you were going in a different direction. Prabhupada's writings are that the potency that we find in them is that they are the elucidation of or exposition upon Shastra. That's the statement that I made. You're saying something else altogether, as far as I can hear. Shastra is the basis of whatever Guru says that I described earlier. Okay. So, that separately, you're speaking about the principle of Shiksha Guru. Shiksha Guru is the person, or Shiksha Guru is the text spoken by and recorded from the speaking of the Shiksha Guru. That's a separate point. The point that I made in class was Guru Sadhu Shastra Shastra. And that statement comes from Prabhupada too. So how do I know that? From hearing from Prabhupada. So, as well, it makes sense. So, now, separately is, how do we see the deliverer as Shiksha Guru, deliverer of that scripture? Do we see as the person, which is great if one had the opportunity to be in his physical presence, or as the text that he wrote because one hasn't had the opportunity to be in his physical presence?
That's my question, because we can say ascending or less than. We don't be in this physical presence.
Okay. This is a nice topic. What is Prabhupada's position within our society? For that matter, we can go somewhere in between and say Rupa Goswami, or Chaitanya, or Sanatana Goswami, take your pick. That's my Shiksha Guru. Within ISKCON, because Prabhupada established ISKCON, Bhaktisiddhanta established Gaudiya Math, and Prabhupada established ISKCON in full fidelity of Bhaktisiddhanta's teachings, but ISKCON. So within ISKCON, Prabhupada is our primary Shiksha Guru. Not Vyasadeva, not Bhaktisiddhanta, or not Rupa Goswami. Although they will say nothing other than what Rupa Goswami said, or what Vyasadeva said. But primary Shiksha Guru has a special meaning. Like in Sri Sampradaya, Ramanujacharya is that it's even more than the principal Shiksha Guru. You know, but whatever it is that he said, he didn't just pull it out of the air. It's from the simple succession. But he systematically took those teachings and the statements of scriptures and cohesively presented them in a written form. Comprehensively, systematically. And that's what the principal acharyas of the four sampradayas did. In our case, a Madhvacharya is that person for us. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a Madhvagodiya sampradaya. But Chaitanya is that person for us. And in our contemporary scene, Prabhupada is that person. Not that Prabhupada presented anything other than what Mahaprabhu said or anything other than what Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, but he created a society which is fundamentally based upon Prabhupada's teachings, and therefore he's the primary Shiksha Guru for generations to come, and embodied in his... There's many forms. The book form is one. But many other ways he provided teachings that provide that body of wisdom which ISKCON is to be the follow of. To clarify this point that you're raising, Ravindra Sri Prabhu has been commissioned to write a book. It's such an important point. That not only today, but, you know, next generation, with Prabhupada's, what's the big deal? Because this is, you know, just shortly after Prabhupada's departure, but what about in this time, what is Prabhupada's position? How are we to understand that as a primary Shiksha Guru? It's not the same as Vyas. Vyas compiled the Vedas And the Bhagavatam was his commentary upon Vedanta Sutra, but it also wasn't, he didn't just creatively write it. Different than he manifested it, Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada has taught us that in the Bhagavatam, in the heavenly planets, this is 18,000, that's, can't recall the number, 300,000 verses or something like that. Some large number, more verses. So is that creative writing? Or the writings of Narottam Das Thakur, as we've heard from Prabhupada again and again, those who were after Narottam Das Thakur, described, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, they are also scripture, in that they are, the Prabhupada's explanation is that in that they are illuminating with perfect clarity and transparency the teachings of the scripture, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And who is Lord Chaitanya? He is disclosing who is Lord Chaitanya in his teachings and the mood. So it's scripture of a different kind, but it's also scripture. And Kapiladeva, he's giving instructions to Devahuti, so he's Shiksha Guru. But what are those instructions that he's giving? It's simply expounding upon that which Devahuti, I'm making the presentation, she already knew. She was an uneducated lady. Daughter Swayambhu Mahato. We can be sure Swayambhu Mahato taught his daughter perfectly. And she was a perfect follower of what she heard from her father. Still, she's approaching Lord Kapila to go on the other side of material existence. So Shiksha Guru is a function on behalf of Krishna. And for within ISKCON, there may be multiple Shiksha Gurus, but Prabhupada is principal Shiksha Guru, because all teachings within ISKCON must be in full fidelity with his teachings. That's the Shiksha Guru function. Murari.
Could you clarify something for me? When Prabhupada speaks of self-realization behind yourself, and Vedakuti is talking about transcendental God, talking about the same thing, because I think they both need of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Are you happy with yes as an answer?
The higher self and the transcendental God are the same?
Yeah. Well, I is a part of the transcendental self. It's the instrument through which one sees, which is part of the transcendental self. Yes?
Prabhupada came from a time where, throughout part of the time of his life, he was emancipated by the spirit of genuine medicine, of India, which made him emancipated as someone who was not over sight of the Indian government.
Not over what?
He was, all the Indians were free from the government of Indian colonies.
Okay.
I think that because you're a free person.
You're speaking about a point in history? He came at a time when India had just become freed from Indian subjugation, British subjugation. That's your point.
That is correct.
Okay.
That's pretty motivating. You and your country are free, and it seems a lot of the stuff that you did, when you articulated a passion together with his writings, you were brilliant because your freedom is very motivating. Then you got it, and to this day, you're always coming from different countries which haven't been free for that long. How because these devotees might have a post-traumatic stress disorder or some type of mental illness from a war zone, and they might, we might not understand how they work mentally while they're going through the spiritual process. How can we intelligently understand and share that with devotees who might have not been living in a society that has had a freedom for 100 years, 20 years, and their freedom is taken for granted if they've been independent or something?
Well, I'm processing your question in a different way than you, that you're asking it.
What's the question?
Let me just... There's this way of looking at great personalities that says they're products of their time. Their greatness is... they're products of their time. And they just happen to be, you know, right on with their time. And therefore, that's how we understand their greatness. I think that's what it's called. The opposite is given a term like heliography. It's, you know, you just expound the greatness of the person, don't take any consideration of the context of their time. You just look, you know, you just glorify them. You don't look at any, you know, worldly feature of how they became what they became. So, one comment, as you were speaking, I was thinking of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was Prabhupada's spiritual master who was teaching the same message even with greater intensity. Not because, you know, and it wasn't a product of his time because it was during the time of British occupancy and he was against it. In fact, when Prabhupada first met Bhaktisiddhanta, very first meeting, they had never even seen each other before, and Prabhupada paid his obeisances at a rooftop in Calcutta, and immediately, he began saying to Prabhupada, you should go to the West. You're an educated person. You know English. Go to the West and take this teaching of Lord Chaitanya. At the time, Prabhupada was in college, married with a child already, and he was a follower of Gandhi. So towards the end, he raised the question and said, how is this possible? The world won't pay any attention to this message as long as India is under British rule. And then, after British rule is over, then people will listen to this message. Bhaktisiddhanta's teaching was quite different than Europe evaluation. He said, it doesn't matter anything about time. The message is transcendental. Transcendental message isn't accepted because of circumstances or generated out of circumstances. Transcendental message is a transcendental message that it needs to be broadcast. It's not that later will be better. Later will be different. And now will be different. And the message is imperative and it's self-luminous. And go back in time from Bhaktisiddhanta to acharyas that were not part of British rule. Sometimes they were part of Muslim rule. Sometimes they were part of Vaishnava rule. And the same message. It's not a message, and the urgency of the message is not a product of the time. The urgency, the message and the urgency of the message, when it's delivered by a true, qualified, realized soul, is not generated by the times. That's one way of looking, you know, it's a different way of looking at a great personality than the circumstances that were playing upon him and the world around him, and he being very magnanimous and very brilliant, came up with an expression that people bought into because it was, you know, it resonated with the times. And therefore he became a great person. That's another way of looking at somebody. And that's not how I'm accustomed to looking at Srila Prabhupada or his teachings. And the way that he expressed it. Certainly, Prabhupada was very tuned into his audience. So he knew how to communicate the audience, communicate the message to the audience. For example, when Prabhupada was in India, he would speak in a certain way. One of the things that he would do in India was he would quote verses and verses and verses and verses and verses. In part because people could understand the verses and in the West they couldn't understand the verses. But also in India, respect is elevated when a person not just says something but supports it with scripture. That's no real authority. And so he spoke that way. And then to a Western audience would speak in a different way. But the message wasn't, nor the urgency of the message, the mode of delivery of the message, wasn't created by the circumstance or the audience. It was a transcendental, deep transcendental sharing. This, you know, one of the statements of the Srimad Bhagavatam goes back to Satya Yuga, when Prahlad Maharaj was speaking to his classmates about the urgency of a six-year-old boy to take up spiritual life now. It wasn't circumstantial. It was his transcendental compassion. They were saying, look, we're children, we'll do that later, let us play. He's giving them a whole life, you know, up to the end of death, the end of life. The reasons why material energy works in such a way that you'll always have something to do to distract you. Let's do it now. And he led them and they did it. And the school teachers came in and freaked out. Look what you're doing. So, our perspective of a transcendentalist like Srila Prabhupada, or like Bhaktisiddhanta, or like these other names that I've mentioned, Prahlad Maharaj, it's not, they're not products of their time, they're transcendentalists. The transcendentalist is not molded by their times, they're transcendental. It's coming from another source than those material influences, time and circumstance. Jitendra, you got something?
Sightings all being explained, that Bhaktisiddhanta expressed Prabhupada, these things that are going on in society, like bubbles on the ocean of materialism, there's always some disturbance going on, you know, we're going to some places beyond that. Bubble on the ocean.
That's a nice example, yeah. Now, you could spend some time looking at the bubbles, looking at the circumstances, and the effects of those circumstances, because it does move people. Time and circumstance moves people. But a transcendentalist takes that into consideration in terms of delivering the message, but it doesn't create their sense of urgency, nor the message itself. Anything from the lady's side? Yes. Okay, discrepancy in things that Prabhupada said here and there, okay.
And when such things do happen, she perceives that
she can ignore them and say, maybe I don't understand.
That's okay.
Or is it okay to take to, because I can't take to that superior, I cannot take it to that superior easily.
Why not? Okay. Yeah. Often that's how it works. You know, if I just continue to hear and to read and to and then the illumination comes. I don't need to get stuck and get all, you know, absorbed in this and that and how come and what's going on. I don't have to go there. I could just be very patient, and in the course of time, the illumination will come in natural sequence. As I'm more qualified and I can see the bigger picture better. That's fine. Fine. It's very common, especially for, at least in my experience with new people, the training from, you know, the Western education kind of perspective is nitpicky, you know. You know, not looking for the essence, looking for detail. The detail makes everything. So the details do fit, but they, you know, they don't have the capacity to understand it. So what you described is actually a very good path. Now, then if there's some, especially when there's some that reoccur, those are the ones that really should get some attention, bring some attention to. Because in some cases it's not just, I don't see the big picture, it's something, you know, I got a problem inside, and that's what's causing the, you know, the deeper concern, or seeing this discrepancy in a repeated way. I've got some issues, and I'd like, you know, to know what they are, because I may not even know what they are. Okay, that does it. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.